Well, good morning, everyone. This is Chair Rain Moran, pursuit of House Rule 10.01. I call this remote meeting of the House Ways and Means Committee to order. Please take the roll, Ms. Bachman.
Chair Moran?
Present.
Moran, present. Vice Chair Olson?
Present.
Olson, present. Representative Garofalo?
Present.
Garofalo, present. Representative Albright?
Present.
Albright, present. Representative Becker Finn?
Present.
Becker Finn, present. Representative Bernardi?
Present.
Bernardi, present. Representative Eklund?
Present.
Eklund, present. Representative Hansen?
Present.
Hansen, present. Representative Hassan?
Hassan is present.
Hassan, present. Representative Hertas?
Hertas, present.
Hertas, present. Representative Hornstein?
Present.
Hornstein, present. Representative Johnson?
Present.
Johnson, present. Representative Kreisha?
Present.
Kreisha, present. Representative Liebling?
Present.
Liebling, present. Representative Lilly?
Lilly, present.
Lilly, present. Representative Mariani?
Mariani, present.
Mariani, present. Representative Marquardt?
Marquardt, present.
Marquardt, present. Representative Miller?
Miller, present.
Miller, present. Representative Nash?
Present.
Nash, present. Representative Nelson?
Present.
Nelson, present. Representative Noor?
Noor, present.
Noor, present. Representative O'Neill, excused. Representative Pawlowski?
Pawlowski, present.
Pawlowski, present. Representative Petersburg?
Present.
Petersburg, present. Representative Pinto?
Present.
Pinto, present. Representative Schumacher?
Schumacher, present.
Schumacher, present. Representative Schultz?
Present.
Schultz, present. Representative Scott?
Here.
Scott, present. Representative Sundin?
Present.
Sundin, present. That concludes the roll. There is a quorum present.
Okay, great. A quorum is present. So, members, our first agenda item is approval of the minutes from our hearing on Wednesday, March the 17th. The minutes were included in the hearing documents emailed to you by the committee staff. Are there any questions or corrections on the minutes? If not, Representative Olson, would you like to move the minutes?
So moved, Madam Chair.
Thank you. So Representative Olson moves approval of the minutes from March the 17th, 2021. Members, please unmute briefly for a voice vote. All in favor of the minutes, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed? The motion prevails and the minutes are approved. Well, we have a full agenda today. We're going to start with a presentation from MMB about the funds that Minnesota expects to receive from the American Rescue Plan Act that recently passed in Congress. While we could easily spend an entire hearing going through the details of this stimulus package, I have asked MMB to provide a high-level overview for today. And I know that our House nonpartisan staff, as well as the commissioner and his team, are available to provide members with further information as requested. So we are going to take about 20 minutes to walk through what is in the stimulus bill for Minnesota, and hopefully we'll be able to take a few questions from members. We have Director Rayten here. And I believe we're going to open up with her this morning. And remember, I just want you to know that, you know, as we're still learning, you know, clear indicators about what it means for the American Rescue Plan for Minnesota, we don't have all those answers right now. So, but please, you know, do any follow-up that you need to do with the commissioner and Director Rayten. So, Director Rayten, could you please introduce yourself and begin your presentation?
Certainly, Madam Chair. Thank you. My name is Britta Rayton. I'm State Budget Director at Minnesota Management and Budget. I also have with me Amy Jorgensen. She is the director of our COVID Response Accountability Office. So we'll be walking through this deck together. Madam Chair, I really appreciate you highlighting that we are at the very early stages with getting information about the American Rescue Plan and what exactly it means for the state of Minnesota. We do not yet have guidance from the federal government about much of the bill, and most importantly, about that significant federal pot of state fiscal relief funding. And so that, I know there are tremendous amounts of questions about that. We will do our best to provide answers where possible, but we are still without guidance from the Treasury, and will likely be in that space for a few weeks now. So Laura, if you can switch to the next slide. So really our goal today is just to provide an overview of the types of funding that are included in the American Rescue Plan. In many cases, we do have preliminary estimates for the funding and for the purpose. But again, just want to make sure everyone is clear that we're in the place where we have not yet received awards in most cases, and we are still waiting for guidance to come from the federal government. I do want to highlight we did send to the legislature on Friday a 20-day Legislative Advisory Commission request to review the federal funds. So for those of you that sit on the LAC for various jurisdictions, that request did come over on Friday, highlighting where we have estimates of funding that we will receive for the American Rescue Plan for the legislative review. If you'll turn to the next slide, Laura, thank you. This slide provides an overview of the estimates of Minnesota allocations that was provided to the state by Federal Funds Information for the States. So Federal Funds Information for the States is an organization we work with out of Washington, D.C., and they, when we have these large significant stimulus bills pass, they provide an analysis of how the funding will break down, particularly in those cases where the funds are allocated on a formula basis. So this analysis, again, comes from Federal Funds Information for the States. We will get more information as we get actual awards. We submitted more funding in the LAC request than is shown here, and that's because we did have state agencies make some estimates about the funds that were not formulaic of how much we might receive from the bill. But these are the ones that flow to states on a formula that's in the bill where our federal partner FFIS was able to provide an analysis. So I'm just going to walk through this relatively quickly. The first blue box that's bolded at the top is the state fiscal relief funds of about $2.577 billion coming to the state of Minnesota. The next line shows the local fiscal relief funding. A portion of this will flow through the states, and much of it will flow directly to local units of government. And when we get to the next slide, Amy Jorgensen will talk in a bit more detail about that. Then there is also a pot of funding for capital projects, about $179 million for capital projects, and we have a slide that provides a little more detail about that as well. The next section really looks at the funding that flows to the state for schools. There's another large pot of funding for the elementary and secondary school emergency relief funding. You may have heard this referred to as ESSER funds. We've received a number of allocations now of ESSER funds that flow through the states. There's about $1.3 billion included for that. There's also assistance for non-public schools, as well as direct assistance to higher education. So this funding, this $552 million shown for higher education, will flow to the institutions directly. Then there's additional funding through the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act of nearly $50 million coming to the state. There's also the next kind of blue section is really focused on early childhood and child care. There's additional funding for the Child Care Development Block Grant of about $203 million. The Child Care Stabilization Grant is a new stream of funding, and that's $325 million that's estimated to come to the state of Minnesota. Then there's some smaller pots for child care entitlement, as well as Head Start funds. The Head Start funds flow directly to Head Start providers, so actually don't come through a state agency. Going down a little further, you can see there's the Low Income Energy Assistance Program, also known as LIHEAP, of $110 million approximately that'll come to the state as well as pandemic emergency assistance at $14 million. There's also some specific funds around child abuse prevention. The funding listed in the blue box at the top of the second column is really for long-term care and supportive services to keep individuals in their home. So really focused on long-term care and those sorts of services. I won't go through each of those in depth. The next kind of white section shows the mental health block grant at about nearly $22 million, as well as a substance abuse block grant at $20 million. There's also additional funding through WIC. And then the next blue section, you can see there is transit funding. This will flow to the Met Council, but also to other urbanized area transit providers. Those, I believe, are Mankato, St. Cloud, Rochester, and Duluth. The non-urbanized transit funding, the $11 million shown there, goes through MnDOT to go to Greater Minnesota Transit. And then there's some smaller dollar amounts that come to the state through FEMA, as well as, and I should say this is specific programmatic dollars through FEMA. We also have the ability to apply to FEMA for all of the expenses that are FEMA eligible. That's not what's reflected here. And then there's also funding through for museums and library services. In the LAC submission, you'll see that coming through the Department of Education to support libraries, as well as the National Endowment for the Arts. You'll see that request coming through the Arts Board to receive those funds, and then the National Endowment for the Humanities. But overall, you can see from the FFIS estimates, that's nearly $8 billion through formulaic allocations that will flow through the state of Minnesota. So with that, I'll turn to the next slide. And Amy, I'm hoping you can jump in here to talk a little bit about how this local money divides up. This slide really just narrows in on that state and local flexible fiscal relief funding, and that was the first couple lines in the previous slide.
Yeah, thank you, Britta. Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Amy Jorgensen, and I'm the Director of the COVID Response Accountability Office at MMB. As Britta said, so the amount of money that's going to be coming, that we're kind of referring to as kind of the more flexible pot of money, is for state and local fiscal recovery funds. So again, about $2.577 billion coming to the state directly for its uses. Then counties, most counties will receive a total of a little over $1 billion, $1.109. Metro cities will be receiving about $595 million, and then other non-counties will be receiving about $420 million. That's the portion that we anticipate will be coming through the state. We believe that the county money and the metro city money will go directly to those entities, but the other non-county money of $420 million will be coming to the state for us to pass through to them. And then the other piece there is, as Britta mentioned, is the capital projects piece of about $179 million. So overall, in total, for those different about five pots of money, is about $4.881
billion. Thank you, Amy. If we turn to the next slide, we'll start to go into a little bit more detail about these state and local fiscal recovery funds. Again, this is just that piece that is the more flexible funding source coming from the American Rescue Plan. So both the $2.577 billion coming to the state, as well as the $2.125 billion flowing to local units of government in Minnesota, have the following available uses. The first is to respond to the public health emergency or its negative economic impacts. And then they specify including assistance to households, small businesses, nonprofits, or impacted industries. Another eligible use is to provide premium pay for essential government workers, as well as to provide grants to eligible employers that they may offer premium pay to their essential workers. And then there's a use that's allowable to replace revenue losses. And so this is one distinction from the coronavirus relief fund that we saw in the CARES Act. Replacing revenue losses was explicitly not an allowable use. Now it is called out as an allowable use. One thing that we are waiting on guidance is for is exactly how we are allowed to calculate that revenue loss. It's for revenue loss that's due to the public health emergency. And the language in the bill says that it's relative to revenues collected in the most recent full fiscal year of the state prior to the emergency. Kind of on its face, without further guidance, we're assuming that means we are comparing revenues collected in FY20 or 21 to a baseline of revenues collected in 19 to demonstrate revenue loss. And then also the state and local fiscal recovery funds can be used to make necessary investments in water, sewer, or broadband infrastructure. And if you turn to the next slide. So in terms of the restrictions on the use of the funds, and this is another space where we are hoping to receive more thorough guidance from the Treasury. But a state or territory shall not use the funds provided under this section to either directly or indirectly offset a reduction in the net tax revenue of such state or territory that's resulting from a change in law, regulation, or administrative interpretation. Frankly, there's a lot of questions about what indirectly offsetting a net tax revenue reduction means. The Treasury did come out in the press last week and say that states can use their own revenues to reduce taxes but can't use the federal resources to backfill for tax reductions. We will need to see more in writing before we have a clear understanding of what that interpretation means. There's also a restriction on funds being deposited into any pension funds. What we know about the availability of the dollars is that they will be available 60 days after a state certifies. But what we don't know is the certification process yet. There isn't a certification process that has been made public. And these funds are for costs incurred between March 3rd of 2021 through December 31 of 2024. And if you turn to the next slide, Laura. And then the other pot of funding that I just want to highlight is the $179 million that is Minnesota's allocation for the capital projects funding. The language in the bill says it is for critical capital projects directly enabling work, education, and health monitoring, including remote options in response to the public health emergency. The Department of Treasury will have an application process to access these funds that they will have established within 60 days of the bill passing. So that application process does not yet exist currently. If you turn to the next slide, Laura. So on that initial slide that showed the FFIS or federal funds information for the state's estimates, that's really where there was formulaic funding in the bill flowing to the states based on things like population measures or unemployment rate measures. There's also funding in the bill where we have made some estimates about what might come to Minnesota, but there isn't a formulaic allocation in the bill. So the testing and vaccination money that is in the bill, we don't yet know how much Minnesota will receive, but MDH has made some estimates that are reflected in the LAC submission that came over on Friday, just based on the percentage that Minnesota received from the most recent federal bill in December, the percentage of the total federal allocation that Minnesota received. So the CDC may make grants in a very similar way. They may not, but we're starting with an estimate of kind of the proportion we received previously. So MDH's estimate for vaccination funding is an additional $85 million. To enhance, expand, and improve vaccine distribution and administration, as well as provide assistance for local public health. The testing funding, if we received an allocation similar in percentage to what we received in December, would result in $751 million for the state of Minnesota. But that remains to be seen, but that did get submitted through the LAC based on what we think we could receive from this pot of money. But really, this is to implement a national evidence-based strategy for testing and tracing, as well as, again, technical assistance to local or grants to local public health And then to support the development, procurement, distribution of tests for COVID, as well as to enhance IT and support data modernization. And then a new source of funding through the CDC is genomic sequencing funding. And MDH is estimating they could receive up to $17.5 million for that purpose.
Ms. Radin, you're muted for some reason. Ms. Raytown, we can't hear you.
Thank you. Sorry. I don't know how I got on mute there. This next slide is for housing housing services. This will flow through MHFA as well as human services. Again, this is a space where, particularly for MHFA, they're making some estimates about what they will receive based on previous allocations. So there is additional money for emergency rental assistance. MHFA was estimating, and you'll see that in the materials transmitted last Friday, $150 million may flow through the state. There's also a homelessness assistance and supportive services program with an estimate of $31 million, a homeowner assistance fund to prevent mortgage delinquencies or foreclosures. MHFA is estimating they could receive $55 million, as well as housing counseling funding, where MHFA estimates they could receive $5 million. I also just want to note there's federally administered programs that don't flow through the state that are in the American Rescue Plan as well. Let's turn to the next slide, Laura. Additionally, there's small business assistance in the American Rescue Plan. There is some funding that we believe will flow through the state. Again, this isn't coming on the same formulaic way, so not reflected in the FFIS spreadsheet. There's a community navigator pilot program to assist eligible businesses. Deed estimates we could receive $3.5 million. And then there's a state small business credit initiative, indeed estimates we could receive $50 million. Also, just want to highlight that there's a lot that is being federally administered, not flowing through the states. The Paycheck Protection Program, economic injury disaster loan payments, as well as a restaurant revitalization fund and a shuttered venue operator allocation. Turning to the next slide. Again, just want to highlight, and I'm sure you're all well aware of the unemployment provisions in the bill, that these were extended through September 6th of 2021. There's also funding for UI fraud prevention, equitable access, and timely payments to eligible workers. We expect some of those to go through as grants to states. And then the federal bill also makes the first $200 in UI received non-taxable at the federal level for households with incomes under $150,000. Turning to the next slide. And then lastly, I just want to highlight there is significant assistance to individuals. FFIS did provide an estimate of how much would flow to the people in Minnesota through direct stimulus checks. Their estimate was $6.331 billion. And then there's also relief to individuals through tax changes as well. The child tax credit is one that has received significant attention as well. Turning to the next slide. With this slide, Amy, I think I'll pass it back to you to walk through a bit about how we will be administering funds within state government.
Thanks, Britta. So MMB, as Britta said, submitted information to you all, to the legislature, for the 20-day LAC submission last week. The timeline for U.S. Treasury distribution of the funds to states is unknown, but the requirement is that they must distribute the money to the states within 60 days of state certification. Right now, we have absolutely no Treasury guidance available for the flexible funding sources. All we're doing is just kind of a cold read of the law language. So that's what this presentation was based on today. As well as the capital projects funds, we know that is going to require a direct application to Treasury, but we do not know the process at this point. There will be new reporting requirements, as there were for the Coronavirus Relief Fund, which will require significant new processes and procedures within state agencies and at MMB to track all that funding and make sure that we report it timely and accurately to the federal government. And then some of the funds, including the state and local fiscal relief and capital project funds, are available for multiple years through calendar year 2024. And so again, you know, as Britta said early on, you know, we just want to advise some caution as far as trying to designate projects which might be available for this type of funding, because we just really don't know a lot yet. Last time when we had the CRF, the guidance that came out was significantly more detailed than the language that was in the bill. And so as soon as that becomes available, we will work to digest that and understand that a little bit better and do more education around that.
Thanks, Amy. And I think that concludes our presentation. So we're happy, Chair Moran, to take questions.
Okay.
If anyone has questions.
Thank you, Director Rayton and Jordanson. We do have a couple of questions. So I would like to open it up to Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And first of all, Madam Chair, can you hear me okay?
We can hear you.
Thank you. What's your time frame for how much time we have to review this?
Let's give you, it went a little bit longer than we thought, so maybe about 10, 15 minutes.
Okay. I'd recommend we go longer than that, but it's your call. So for the presenters, if you go to page 3 of your slide deck, you list a total of $8 billion. I'm familiar with I think everyone on the committee is familiar with the LAC process. The LAC process is advisory. It's more notice than authorization from the legislature. From the Walz administration's perspective, of this $8 billion listed here, how much of this will require authorization from the legislature?
Director Rayton?
So Representative Garofalo, we did make sure we submitted it through the 20-day process. And as you know, the 20-day process, the legislature can put that funding on hold until the end of session. And so fully anticipating that through the legislative process, much of this will be reviewed, particularly the state fiscal relief funds, and have a discussion with the legislature about those allocations.
And Madam Chair, Mr. Tan, I appreciate that, and I understand that you're going to I hear the words you said, but I would like you to answer my question of that $8 billion, what amount does the Walz administration believe it needs the authorization, not soliciting our input, but of that $8 billion, what does the Walz administration believe needs to be authorized by the legislature?
Representative Rayton, Director Rayton.
So Representative Garofalo, I think what I want to be clear about is that the LAC process does provide the authority, if these funds are put on hold after session, for the spending to occur through that 10-day process. The 10-day process is not the process by which we submitted this funding to the legislature. We submitted it through the 20-day process, which allows the legislature to act as a full body on those funds and put funds on hold for review and appropriation if that's the direction the legislature chooses to go. But this creates a window of time between now and the end of session where there is the ability to allocate those funds in partnership with the legislature.
Madam Chair, Mr. Tan. Again, I am familiar with the LAC process. I am familiar with the both the 10 and 20-day review processes, and I'm also aware of the actions that are available and not available during the legislative session and when the legislative session ends. But I'm respectfully asking that you answer my question, and I'll ask it a third time, Director Rattan, and I mean this respectfully. The Walz administration, of this $8 billion, how much does the Walz administration believe it needs legislative authorization to spend?
Director Rayton.
With all due respect, Representative Garofalo, I feel like I am answering your question, that during the legislative session is the window of time when there is this opportunity for legislative authorization. After the legislative session, if that does not occur, then it would go through the LAC. So I don't think it is as black and white as that question suggests, because we are in this time period of where we have submitted it through the 20-day process. These funds are not on hold at the current time, but the legislature could do so. If the funds are not put on hold, after 20 days, there is authority to spend.
And Madam Chair and Director Rutan, I, again, appreciate what you're saying. I like you, and I think we have a good working relationship. But I would like you to point out then that at the end of the legislative session, this administration is planning on spending the money without legislative authorization.
So one moment, Director Rayton, because we're not going to go to this circle, right? But what I think I'm hearing the director state is that it's an opportunity for the legislature to do this work in partnership, to have a role to play in allocating these dollars. And if that does not happen during our regular session, at the end of session, the governor has the power to disperse this money as he chooses. And we don't want that to happen. We want to be involved in this process.
Well, so but Madam Chair, to that point, he does not have the power to do that. That is an opinion of this administration that he can do that. But he does, in the reading of the statute, that's not how I interpret it. So I do think it is important to point, we need to know the administration's position on this issue, that this $8 billion in the absence of legislative agreement during the regular session, they do believe they have the authority to spend this $8 billion only constrained by the guidance of the federal law.
Okay. Well, I haven't heard that, Representative Garofalo.
So well, they just said it, Madam Chair. Now, you can go to Director Rutan and you can ask her again, but that's just what she said. She says they're using the LAC process for this, which is advisory, and at the conclusion of the regular session, the governor can spend this money. You know, if I have said something inaccurate, Director Rutan, please correct me.
Well, I think, Director Rutan, are you going to give us a different answer? If not, I'm going to ask Representative Garofalo if you have another question. But go ahead, Director Rutan.
Representative Moran, I can give a potentially clarifying answer. So it has been now submitted through the 20-day process. That starts that process during the legislative session. For federal funds following the legislative session, where the specific purpose of those dollars was clear through the federal law, those can be spent. For the more flexible funding, I think we would come back to the legislature through the 10-day process to clarify the purposes of that spend. But yes, we would continue to use the LAC process if these are not appropriated through the legislative process.
And so, and Madam Chair, Director Rutan, at the conclusion of the legislative session, that LAC process allows the governor to act unilaterally. Is that correct?
Representative Garofalo, Chair Moran, at the conclusion of the legislative session, we would act on the proposals that were submitted through the 20-day process. Where we need to clarify purpose, we could do so through the 10-day process. But that 10-day process, to your point, is advisory.
Representative Garofalo.
I'm just wondering if there's any DFLers who have any problems with one dude deciding how to spend $8 billion, or, maybe it's just a Republican thing. Are there any DFLers on the committee who have a concern about this?
Well, Representative Garofalo, I think it will be helpful if you do not agree with Director Rutan's response, that you try to, I mean, there's opportunity for you to also go into a meeting with the governor, you know, get some clarity or LAC process here. Right now, you know, she's responding to your questions as best as she can. If she's not responding in a clear way that is helpful for you, then I would just suggest that, you know, you look into other possibilities of getting.
Well, Madam Chair, Director Rutan has answered my questions. She has no communication problems. I understand what she's saying, and I have no complaints about her. My question is to the DFLers on the committee, the legislators. Are you okay with this $8 billion being decided by one guy?
Yeah.
That's the question I have. Okay. Dr. Rattan has articulated the administration's viewpoints. Okay. I understand that.
All right. Yeah. So we're not going to respond to that question. We're not going to respond to that. But if you don't have another question, I'm going to move on to Representative Liebling.
In the interest of time, I have no other questions. But, of course, I have many questions of my colleagues. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Liebling.
Madam Chair, thank you. I just want to shift gears. And Director Rattan, maybe you're not prepared to really answer this, but I think one piece of the federal bill that might be really important for members to know just in a very general way, if you can, is about the impact on insurance premiums. So as we know now, there are federal subsidies that help pay for insurance premiums for policies that are purchased on MNsure, and they are sliding scale, and they go up to, I believe it's 400% of federal poverty level. And my understanding is that under this bill, well, let me back up just a second. Members know that people with higher incomes often really are struggling to pay the premiums because they're very, very high after that point. And the federal bill actually fixes the problem, at least for 2 years. Do you have that information that you can just give it in a really brief manner? I know we're not going into this today, but this is so central to some of what we're working on or should be working on this session that I think it's important for members to hear.
Director Rattan.
Representative Liebling and Chair Moran, I wish I had more detail on that. I don't feel prepared to speak to that in detail, but I'm sure we can find someone who is more has more depth of knowledge in that area and get those answers for you.
And Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just so members know where I'm going, and you know, this is, of course, is not the authoritative statement on it, but the federal bill caps premiums at 8.5% of a person's income. So it essentially takes that 400% of poverty limit for getting federal subsidies and takes it all the way up. There's no more limit, at least for the next 2 years, as I understand it. So this is a premium affordability piece that will be just so helpful to a lot of Minnesotans who've been struggling with this. So I hope we will get more. I'm sure we will get more information as time goes on, but I just wanted people to be aware of that. Thank you.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm going to just ask this question maybe a little bit differently because I'm still a little bit confused with the answers that we got from Representative Garofalo. So I'm going to ask it slightly different. It appears to me that all these funds are coming to the state of Minnesota, and the legislature's responsibility here is only to inject itself to these decisions if it chooses to, but otherwise it's up to the discretion of the agencies that have applied for that. So my question gets to, are there any of these funds that are coming to the state that requires legislative approval before they're spent? Because it sounds like if we don't do anything positively, they'll get spent according to the whim of the agencies and so forth. Am I reading that correctly?
Director Rattan.
Chair Moran and Representative, so Minnesota Statute 3.3005 addresses the receipt and spending of federal dollars. And essentially, the LAC process is in place for state agencies to provide information about the federal funds. It is different when the legislature is in session, which is why we made sure we got information to the legislature by that 20 days in advance of the third deadline is the statute, the statutory reference. So we made sure we got a 20-day request to the legislature on Friday. What that does is put the federal funds into the legislative process, and the legislature can request to put those funds on hold during the session and weigh in on the expenditure of those funds during the legislative process. So that can be done through passing language that directs the spending of those dollars.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you. And could you clarify, just us putting it on hold doesn't change where it gets spent. Is that correct?
Representative Petersburg, Chair Moran, putting it on hold keeps it on hold through session, so the legislature has time to act. And so essentially what the federal fund statute in Minnesota does is it says the federal funds will be spent unless the legislature acts to either prevent that spending or to put some specifications around that spending during the legislative process.
Representative Petersburg, one last question.
Yeah, thank you. I guess that is the answer we have. It's kind of like the emergency orders. The power is there until we take it away. The spending is there unless we decide to take it away, which kind of eliminates and reduces really our ability to have real input, because if we have issues that are still disagreed by the end of session, it will just get spent anyway. So thank you for as much clarity as you could provide. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and to Director Wrighten. I have three questions. One is on the bonding amount. Would that be applicable for natural resources betterment of buildings to improve for helping with mitigating any disease transmission? So let's say if we have a state park that's been shuttered, a building that's been shuttered, and there's capital improvements that can be made, would those funds be eligible for that type of capital improvement?
Director Rachel.
Representative Chair Moran, I can't say definitively yes, because really all we have in terms of information about those capital projects dollars are what's written in the bill. And what's written in the bill is shown on the slide. So it's a pretty limited number of words to define what those dollars can be used for. But I mean, on first blush, if we're improving buildings to make them more safe in terms of disease transmission in the buildings, that seems in line with the intended purpose of the funds. But I think we will have to, before we can be more definitive, we'll need to see some guidance from the Department of Treasury.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you. And then on the aid to museums and shuttered venues, two specific things. In last year's pandemic response, there was money that was provided to the Minnesota Zoo. And I'm wondering, one, with funds to the Minnesota Zoo, is that eligible for that particular pot of money? Then the second question is the Science Museum. Because the Science Museum was unable to get some of the aid that the zoo had, but we have a state obligation to the Science Museum, and they have been denied their insurance payment for operating loss. So they are in a dire straits without funds. So Minnesota Zoo and the Science Museum, are they eligible for that pot of money or any other discretionary amounts?
Quickly, Director Rayton.
Representative Hansen and Representative Moran, you'll see from the LAC submission that the zoo intends to seek the shuttered venue funding. Whether they will receive it, we don't know at this point, but they do believe they would be eligible. My assumption is that the same would be true for the Science Museum, but that is administered by the federal government. So they would have to apply through the federal government for those funds.
All right, thank you. I'm going to move on. Representative Hansen, I'm sorry, but I do need to move on. I'm hoping Director Wrighton can be available to you to talk to her offline. Representative Noor.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My question to Director Wrighton is, you addressed the issue of non-taxable income for the UI, but I also wanted to check with you. I know we've talked about the PPP. The two programs that you mentioned, the Restaurant Revitalization Fund and also Save Our Stages, or otherwise known as Shattered Life Stages, those are listed as a non-taxable grants. How are we addressing that in our budget process and focus?
The Director Rayton.
Representative Knorr, I just want to make sure I understand the question. That you're saying they're non-taxable at the federal level?
That's correct.
And so I would have to defer to the Department of Revenue. I don't have that detail in terms of what would be needed to make that true at the state level as well. I'm assuming that's your question.
Representative Knorr?
Yes, that's correct, Madam. Okay.
Representative Knorr, there may be some conformity language that would need to be put in place to make that happen and some fiscal impact to our underlying budget. So I would need to defer to the Department of Revenue.
Okay. I'm not sure. Is anyone on this call who can respond to that question? Or will you just be getting back with them at
at a later time, yeah.
Thank you. So the last question goes to Representative Miller.
Well, thank you, Chair Moran. And this has been a great discussion. So thank you, Ms. Rutan. This question is to you, Chair Moran. Based on this conversation, I have some concerns. I've had concerns all session, really the last year, about legislative involvement. So do we have a commitment from you to ensure legislative involvement in the spending of this $8 million? Because if I'm hearing that the House and the Senate can reach out and say, we are going to get control over this, we're able to do that. So can we get that commitment from you at this time that we're going to be doing that this session?
Representative Miller, you can get my commitment. I do believe that it's important for the legislature to be involved in spending this session, right? I believe that's a really important role that we need to play and to be involved. So you have my commitment as to whatever extent that is or means that my obligation and responsibility is to us as a legislative body, that we are a part of that process.
Thank you, Chairman. So my concern is there has been federal money that comes in that the executive branch spends, but it is an $8 billion. And spending originates constitutionally through the House. And I know that because this money is coming under different circumstances, that may not be the case. But with $8 billion, I certainly hope that this goes through the legislative process, which, of course, goes through the House and then the Senate and then agreement with the governor. So I certainly hope that we can do that as a legislature. We've been talking bipartisan that we say the legislature needs to be involved the way it should be. This is an opportunity for us to do it. So I hope that we can gain that commitment from the majority leadership in the House that we're going to take a serious look and have our proper role in place in this. Thank you.
Thank you. We have 2 minutes. I'm going to give you Representative Becker-Finn, 1 minute and hopefully a 1 minute response. Go ahead.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. This will be really quick. Just wanted to clarify, we keep using the word $8 billion, but if I remember the chart that was shown to us, a lot of those funds are going directly to cities and counties. And so just wondering if Ms. Rayton can clarify that. Thank you.
Director Rayton.
Representative Becker-Finn, thank you for the opportunity to do that. Laura, if you could just pull up that slide so we can highlight the amount that's going directly to the locals, because we don't, in many cases, we don't have control over how they spend that money. But there's over $2 billion of that amount does flow to locals. I want to highlight as well, for example, the funding that flows in transit dollars to Met Council. That goes directly to the Met Council. It doesn't flow through the state treasury. So there are, same with the higher education funding of $500 million, that flows directly to the institutions. If you'll go back one page, Laura, thank you. So there are significant pots of money that don't actually flow directly through the state treasury, and therefore we don't actually have the authority to dictate how, for example, a local government is spending their dollars. Thank you for highlighting that.
Thank you so much. So with that, I want to thank you, Director Rayton and Representative Jordanson, for your presentation today. There is a lot of information to process, and we are still learning details about this stimulus package. All right, so I hope members, if you have any further questions, to follow up directly with our, either with our nonpartisan staff or the department with any additional questions. And I want to remind members that the budget resolution we will be considering tomorrow will be based on the February forecast, which did not account for any direct funding provided to states by the American Rescue Plan Act, since those numbers were not known at the time. So with that, we're going to move on to House File 1203, which is the Wolgamott bill. So the chair will move that House File 1203 be recommended for placement on the general register. We're going to budget approximately 15 minutes and maybe less. I think Wolgamott may have, Representative Wolgamott may not need the whole 15 minutes for this discussion. Representative Wolgamott, welcome to the committee, and I understand you have a substantive amendment. So perhaps you can start with the explanation of the bill first, and then we will move on to your amendment.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much, Madam Chair, and thank you, committee members. It's an honor to be in Ways and Means this morning. I'm here to present House File 1203, which is simply extending the sunset of the COVID-19 workers' compensation presumption for frontline workers, for public safety workers, for healthcare workers, for childcare workers, simply extending that sunset from May 1st, 2021 to December 31st, 2021. I'm very proud that this bill has received unanimous support from the Workers' Compensation Advisory Council, and my amendment simply, the author's amendment simply changes the bill to reflect the compromise struck by the members of the Workers' Compensation Advisory Council.
All right, thank you. So, thank you, Wolgamott. You do have an A2 amendment. Vice Chair Olson, would you care to move the A2 amendment on the author's behalf?
Yes, Madam Chair, I'd be happy to move the amendment.
So, okay, so move. So with that, does any have questions on the, why don't you explain the A2 amendment to us real quick?
Thank you. Originally, my bill had been to, the bill as introduced had the sunset extended to May 1st, 2022. I brought my bill in front of the Workers' Compensation Advisory Council on three different occasions. They struck an agreement to have that date be changed to December 31st, 2021. So the amendment simply gets the bill in the shape that was passed unanimously through the Workers' Compensation Advisory Council.
Thank you. Members, are there any questions on the amendment? Okay, if not, Vice Chair.
Madam Chair, Representative Albright has his hand up.
I'm sorry. Representative Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Wolgamott, I do note the A2 amendment that you're looking to amend on to 1203. Does this bill then conform with the agreed upon language between labor and management and WCAC?
Representative Wolgamott.
Yes, that's my intent, yes.
Representative Albright.
Madam Chair, I'll hold questions until after the amendment is adopted.
Okay, thank you. So is there any other questions to the amendment? If not, Vice Chair Olson renews her motion to adopt the A2 amendment. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Okay, Representative Albright, is there any further questions you would like to ask to the bill?
Yes, I would, Madam Chair. Representative Wolgamott, are you familiar with House File 2253?
Representative Wolgamott.
Yes, I am, and I certainly hope that it gets passed. I'm very much in support of that bill. However, there's an urgency here. Right now, these benefits are set to expire on May 1st, and I'm hearing from public safety workers, from police officers, firefighters, nurses, childcare workers in my district and all throughout the state. They want to make sure that this is a priority for the House and for the legislature. So I'm in support of that, but if for some reason that bill gets tied up, this bill speaks to our values of the legislature and protecting those frontline workers. We have a recess coming up next week, and then after that, there will be only 24 days until this bill sunsets. We want to make sure that we're not leaving our frontline workers out to dry. So That's why I'm moving forward with this bill with the language that was agreed to by the WCAC.
Representative Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Wolgamott, the 1203 is not the endorsed bill that the WCAC endorsed. 2253 is. It includes a number of other provisions. I'm a little bit at a loss for why you would continue to press with 1203 when the provisions of 1203 are also included on page 13 in 2253, and as I understand it, will be moving quickly in both chambers with a House hearing in labor and industry, and you can check with Representative Eklund on that tomorrow, in fact. So why is there a need for duplicitousness when both Representative Sundin, Senator Utke, and myself will assure that this bill is passed into law? Why is 1203 necessary at this juncture if you already have the language in the endorsed WCAC bill?
Representative Wolgamott.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Albright. Again, as I mentioned, this is a very time-sensitive thing. These benefits are set to expire on May 1st, so I'm responding to the needs and desires of frontline workers in my district, all throughout the state, and making sure that we, you know, that we have a multiple avenues, multiple paths to make sure that we get this done for our frontline workers. That's why I've been very proud to work with the WCAC. That's why I'm moving forward with my bill, because there's urgency, there's time sensitivity. We need to make sure that we have all avenues, all vehicles open to get this done for our frontline workers.
Representative Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Wolgamott, does House 2253 in any way, shape, or form not attend to the needs and supports that frontline workers need, as you have on regular occasion extemporaneously done so in committee? I'm at a loss in terms of understanding why 2253 doesn't do anything less than 1203. In fact, I would dare say it does more. And your language, it's not a race, if you will, because my understanding is that 2253 will be passed into law as quick, if not sooner, than 1203, with consideration of the other provisions that are in that bill that aren't in yours.
Okay. We're going to try this one more time. Representative Wolgamott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Albright. Again, I'm the chief author of House File 1203. I've made a commitment to frontline workers to do everything that I can to make sure that there are as many vehicles as possible to get this done. I share your optimism that other House file you mentioned will get passed into law. I'll be very proud to vote for it. But if for some reason that bill gets tied up, this bill speaks to our values of the legislature in protecting police, fire, emergency, frontline workers. We can't forget that. The bill has to pass by May 1st of this year if we're to have the backs of our public safety workers, our healthcare workers, our childcare workers. I'm standing up for my constituents. I'm standing up for frontline workers, and I want to make sure that we have as many vehicles as possible to get this done for them.
Okay, thank you. I think what I'm going to do, I'm going to allow Representative Sundin. I think I heard his name brought into this. I'm going to open this up to Representative Sundin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Both these measures achieve what needs to be achieved. I think it would be terrific to pass the Wolgamott bill along, put it on the general register, and it'll be there if necessary. If there's a hang up with the Berkman's Comp Advisory Council bill, it's still there, and it'll satisfy the needs of all the frontline workers that would be involved. So expect that the Workman's Comp Advisory Council bill will continue on briskly, and we have a backup there. And thanks to Representative Wolgamott for pursuing this issue and actually putting the Workman's Comp Advisory Board into second gear. So thank you very much. But I think that might be the strategy we should be using.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Wolgamott, is your companion bill moving in the Senate?
Representative Wolgamott.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Scott. Not to my knowledge, but again, we are the House of Representatives. We get to decide what bills we bring forward. There are a lot of bills that we're pushing through that reflect our values as a legislature in the House of Representatives that, you know, it's the Senate's business to do what it wants to do. But again, we want to make very clear that the House of Representatives has the backs of these frontline workers. That's why I'm continuing with House File 1203.
So what we're going to do here is we have two other bills on the agenda. And I understand the questions around Representative Wolgamott 1203 bill. We in the House of Minnesota are the majority. This is a bill that we value, and we value the work that Representative Wolgamott had put into this bill. And for that purpose, the bill is in the Ways and Means Committee to move out of the Ways and Means Committee today. And so I don't know how we can continue to direct questions. That to me seems like we're moving in a circle. His statement has been very clear to me about why he has worked so hard on this bill, why he has worked with the WCAC. And so we need to move this bill. I'm going to move on. Peggy Scott, Representative Scott. I'm going to let Representative Albright have this last questions. And my hope is that it would not be the same similar question that I've heard the last three times. Representative Albright.
Oh, Madam Chair, didn't I still have the floor?
You did.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just really more of a statement.
Okay, go ahead, please.
And that is, you know, we have deadlines, and I understand you're getting this bill heard deadline in the House, but it is not moving in the Senate. And I don't understand the urgency. I believe that there's already another bill that contains these same provisions. I understand time is of the essence, but there's still plenty of time to get that bill through as well. I don't see the true value in what we're doing at this moment, but I will leave it at that, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Scott. Representative Albright.
Madam Chair, I serve as the minority liaison to the WCAC, and parts of what Representative Wolgamott has said are truthful. The other ones, I think, scatter a little bit in terms of what the intent of the WCAC has really done. Representative Sundin and I serve on that as the liaisons to the House for purposes of legislation that is agreed to by both labor and management. And I'm certainly happy to refer you to the link for the deliberations that were undertaken back on March 10th for the approval of the assembling of what we now know as House File 2253. WCAC did not approve 1203. It approved House File 2253. It is scheduled to be heard in the Labor and Industry Committee on Wednesday. It is scheduled to be heard in the Senate on Wednesday. This bill will be moved very, very quickly. And to that extent, if it is that such of an emergency, I might suggest that one of the members, and I might even take this up today, it might be even prudent because of the urgency with which Representative Wolgamott senses this, might we take up a resolution and suspend the rules and pass House File 2253 today. If it is that important, Representative Wolgamott, let's pass the WCAC bill today, and you would have my complete support.
Thank you, Representative Albright. So I'm going to end by saying that as chair of the Ways and Means Committee, I made a decision to have this bill heard in committee today. And I do believe as much as you're hearing this bill in Ways and Means Committee today, you will hear also House File 2253 in this committee today.
Madam Chair?
Representative Liebling.
I'm sorry to interrupt you. I thought maybe you'd run. I had my hand up, and I don't know if you can see.
Yeah, I see you.
All right. Just just really briefly, if I may. I just, you know, first of all, things being duplicitous is very common in the legislature. We do this all the time. I mean, when now Senator Abler was in our body, this was his MO, putting things in a lot of different places. This is nothing new, and members know that. I just really wanted to respond, Madam Chair, that I just find it amazing that members here seem to be arguing, Republican members seem to be arguing that we shouldn't do something if the other body isn't doing it. When we've spent hours on the House floor with Republican members trying to bring up bills that we didn't have ready in the House, and that seemed to be no problem for them. So I don't know why the Senate can't accept a bill from us and take it up and pass it, because that sure is what Republicans in this House want to have happen over here. So I just find that, you know, completely without merit. And thank you for letting me get that in, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Liebling. So with that, what we're going to do, we're going to move this bill out of this committee. So the chair renews her motion that House File 1203, as amended, be recommended for placement on the general register. Ms. Sparkman, please take the roll.
Chair Moran?
Aye.
Moran, aye. Vice Chair Olson?
Aye.
Olson, aye. Representative Garofalo?
Yes.
Garofalo, aye. Representative Albright?
No.
Albright, no. Representative Becker-Finn?
Aye.
Becker-Finn, aye. Representative Bernardi?
Aye.
Bernardi, aye. Representative Eklund?
Aye.
Eklund, aye. Representative Hansen?
Aye.
Hansen, aye. Representative Hassan? Representative Hassan? Representative Hertas? Representative Hertas? Representative Hornstein?
Aye.
Hornstein, aye. Representative Johnson?
No.
Johnson, no. Representative Kreisha?
Kreisha, no.
Kreisha, no. Representative Liebling?
Aye.
Liebling, aye. Representative Lilly?
Lilly, aye.
Lilly, aye. Representative Mariani?
Mariani, aye.
Mariani, aye. Representative Marquardt?
Marquardt, aye.
Marquardt, aye. Representative Miller?
No.
Miller, no. Representative Nash?
No.
Nash, no. Representative Nelson?
Nelson, aye.
Nelson, aye. Representative Noor?
Noor, aye.
Noor, aye. Representative O'Neill, excused. Representative Pawlowski?
Pawlowski, aye.
Pawlowski, aye. Representative Petersburg?
Oh.
Petersburg, no. Representative Pinto?
Aye.
Pinto, aye. Representative Schumacher?
Schumacher, no.
Schumacher, no. Representative Schultz?
Aye.
Schultz, aye. Representative Scott?
No.
Scott, no. Representative Sundin?
Aye.
Sundin, aye. Representative Hassan? Representative Hertas? Eighteen ayes, 8 nays.
There have been 18 ayes and 8 nays. The motion prevails and House File 1303, as amended, is recommended for placement on the general register. Thank you, Representative Wogama. We're going to move on to House File 39. The chair will move that House File 39 be recommended for placement on the general register. We're going to budget approximately, we're low on time, so a good 10 minutes, 10, 15 minutes for this discussion. Representative Carson, welcome to the committee. We do have an author's amendment to correct the appropriation language for the bill so that it matches the fiscal note. Representative Olson, would you like to move the A3 amendment for the author?
Yes, Madam Chair, I move the A3.
Vice Chair Olson moves the A3 amendment. All in favor, please say aye.
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 All opposed? Aye. The motion prevails and an amendment is adopted. Representative Carson, please tell us about your bill.
Thank you, Chair Moran and members. It's good to be with you today. The coronavirus pandemic and the related economic fallout have hit the hospitality industry especially hard. While nearly every sector of the economy has experienced the loss of jobs, the amount of loss in hospitality has been devastating. House File 39 seeks to address the situation by requiring certain hospitality employers to rehire the workers laid off during the pandemic when they make the decision to start hiring again. Hospitality employees, many of whom are people of color, have been especially hard hit by COVID-19. As a result, these workers have borne the brunt of the massive layoffs that have occurred because of the pandemic. At hotels especially, laid off workers are nearly 90% people of color and mostly women. Ensuring the rights of these workers to return to their jobs they held pre-pandemic is a critical issue for racial justice as our economy recovers from COVID-19. In addition to protecting workers, House File 39 helps achieve a key ingredient for the speed of our overall economic recovery while maintaining established employer-employee relationships. In short, this common sense legislation will help stabilize an important part of the Minnesota economy as businesses and workers alike recover together from COVID-19.
Thank you, Representative Carson. Is there any questions to the bill?
Madam Chair, Representative Garofalo.
Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't think there's anyone else on our side who has questions or comments, so I'll just give a closing comment on it. And I'll be voting no on this bill and ask members to vote no as well. Obviously, the best way to get workers back to their jobs is to reopen the economy and alleviate the restrictions that are currently imposed. The one-size-fits-all approach is not working for our state. While the fiscal impact for the government coffers in this may be limited, this is a pretty big imposition in our private sector businesses. That being said, I have zero concern about this bill becoming law and imposing these negative consequences. So an extended debate on this measure really merits no, is not worthy of our time. I'll be voting no and encourage my colleagues to do the same. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Garofalo. So there being no further discussion, the chair renews her motion that House File 39, as amended, be recommended for placement on the general register. Ms. Sparksman, please take the roll.
Chair Moran?
Aye.
Moran, aye. Vice Chair Olson?
Aye.
Olson, aye. Representative Garofalo?
No.
Garofalo, no. Representative Albright?
No.
Albright, no. Representative Becker Finn?
Aye.
Becker Finn, aye. Representative Bernardi? Representative Bernardi?
Aye.
Bernardi, aye. Representative Eklund?
Aye.
Eklund, aye. Representative Hansen?
Aye.
Hansen, aye. Representative Hassan? Excused. Representative Hertas?
Hertas, no.
Hertas, no. Representative Hornstein?
Aye.
Hornstein, aye. Representative Johnson?
No.
Johnson, no. Representative Kreisha?
No.
Kreisha, no. Representative Liebling?
Aye.
Liebling, aye. Representative Lilly?
Lilly, aye.
Lilly, aye. Representative Mariani?
Mariani, aye.
Mariani, aye. Representative Marquardt?
Marquardt, aye.
Marquardt, aye. Representative Miller?
No.
Miller, no. Representative Nash?
No.
Nash, no. Representative Nelson?
Nelson, aye.
Nelson, aye. Representative Noor?
Noor, aye.
Noor, aye. Representative O'Neill, excused. Representative Pawlowski?
Pawlowski, aye.
Pawlowski, aye. Representative Petersburg?
No.
Petersburg, no. Representative Pinto?
Aye.
Pinto, aye. Representative Schumacher?
Schumacher, no.
Schumacher, no. Representative Schultz?
Aye.
Schultz, aye. Representative Scott?
No.
Scott, no. Representative Sundin?
Aye.
Sundin, aye. 17 ayes, 10 nays.
Sorry about that. The motion, there being 17 ayes and 10 nays, the motion prevails and House File 39, as amended, is recommended for placement on the general register. Thank you, Representative Carson.
Thank you.
So our last bill on the agenda for today is House File 7. Vice Chair Olson, would you like to move your bill and tell us about it?
Yes, Madam Chair. I move that House File 7 be recommended to be placed on the General Register. So to the bill. Minnesotans care for one another, and we want Minnesota to be a caring state where all families can be healthy and safe. I'm carrying this bill because everyone gets sick, and the coronavirus outbreak is another stark reminder that when people get sick, they should be able to stay home, not just for their own health or that of a loved one, but for the health of all of us. This bill would ensure that Minnesota is a state where, regardless of the color of your skin, your income, or where you work, you can afford to take the time to recover from an illness at home where you can limit its spread, where a sick child can have the comfort of their parent caring for them, where you can go to the doctor before your illness goes from bad to worse, where you can seek support in the wake of a sexual assault, and where those things don't mean you need to worry about missing bills or losing your job. Unfortunately, for far too many, especially those we've called essential during this pandemic, this isn't the Minnesota they experience. An estimated 36% of working people, which is about 932,000 Minnesotans, don't have access to any paid sick and safe time. This means that in a state with the second most Fortune 500 companies per capita, more than a third of working people in our state face a terrible choice between caring for themselves or a loved one and the loss of wages or even employment. Because in many circumstances, it is still legal for workers to be fired for needing to take time off to care for themselves or a loved one. In fact, Black and Latinx workers in our state are even less likely to have access to earned sick and safe time, and part-time workers are 45% less likely than full-time workers. But moreover, the workers in our state who are least likely to have access to earned sick and safe time are the very workers preparing and serving our food, with only 25% of access among food service workers. This is also a public health issue. In keeping what we've seen in more than a dozen states and numerous localities across the country where similar proposals have been passed, including in my own city, plus Minneapolis and St. Paul, providing access to earned sick and safe time also brings benefits to employers through improved recruitment and retention, lower employer health care costs through better use of preventative care, and lower presenteeism for coming to work sick, all of which means higher productivity, fewer workplace injuries, and a healthier workforce and state. This bill has already moved through labor, state government, finance, and judiciary. So this committee's jurisdiction, Article 3, starting on page 13, contains the appropriations, all from the general fund, including $1,306,000 in fiscal year 22 and $1,941,000 in fiscal year 23 for the Department of Labor and Industry, which funds two FTEs and outreach staff in fiscal year 22 to develop trainings and materials to ensure that employers, employees, and HR companies are ready for the start of earned sick and safe time. 11.6 FTEs of investigators and two administrative support staff. $310,000 in one-time rulemaking costs and $13,000 for one-time updates to the existing labor standards case management system, plus $8,400 in annual user licenses. The difference in the two fiscal years relates to the startup costs, as I mentioned, and the effective dates occurring midway through fiscal year 22. The base for DALI going forward is $1,631,000. Next, based on the best practices learned from other states and localities, that we appropriate $300,000 in each fiscal year for grants to community organizations to do education and outreach to workers. And finally, there's $3,000 appropriated to MMB in fiscal year 22 for printing costs to meet the noticed and posting requirements for state employees. Ultimately, House File 7 is about becoming the kind of caring state that I think we all want Minnesota to be. And I'm happy to take questions, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Olson. Do we have any questions? Representative Garofalo.
Thank you. First of all, Madam Chair, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Thank you. Representative Olson, on page one of the fiscal note, the FTEs listed there, can you just cover that for us?
Representative Garofalo, do you just want me to, I can share about all the FTEs. that so there's the FTEs related. Most of it all is for Dolly for the enforcement and outreach and education, but mostly the enforcement piece.
So, Madam Chair, and when we see fiscal year 22 and it says 10.8, and fiscal year 2023 it says 13.6, those are not cumulative, correct?
Representative Olson.
Representative Garofalo, correct.
Okay.
Representative Garofalo.
Okay. Madam Chair, I'll save my final comments on the bill until everyone else on our side has spoken. Thanks.
Thank you. Representative Nash.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And, you know, I'll make more of a commentary and I'll try to be brief, but Representative Olson, you and I have talked about this before when this came before state government finance. I don't know if you've ever had your own company, but as Chair Nelson and I have joked a number of times, I'm a recovering business owner. And I'll tell you this, when you own a business, you're typically, as you start the business, you don't get paid. You hope for an employee one day to help have that as kind of a small measure of success. And when you get that employee, you can almost guarantee yourself that, again, you're not going to get paid on a regular basis because you're going to sacrifice to make sure that you have that employee taken care of. And what your bill is doing is it is kind of sending a message in this time of hopeful recovery to business owners on places like Main Street in Waconia and in Watertown and in other places across my district that the state is saying, we're glad you survived, but now we'd like you to have to carry a bigger burden in taking care of your employees for tons of time off that left to their own devices, the business owners would probably make sure that they were retaining their super valuable employees anyway. On top of that, you've got the taxation of PPP loans that hasn't been dealt with, which is another cheery message that is being sent to these business owners. And it just goes too far. When you try to bring a business into life, whether it's a big business or a small business, this is the kind of bill that is just a punch in the mouth. And I was speaking to one of the the largest employer in my district, Ridgeview Hospital. This would be catastrophic to them. This is a well-intended bill. And Representative Olson, I've always said that I know your compassion, but we also know, according to the chair, that budgets and budget bills are a moral contract. This is not a highly moral bill. This is going to penalize people who own businesses. This is going to penalize people who are trying to do the right thing by their employees, and this is going to be damaging in the long run. So there's probably not a lot of mystery as to where I am on this bill, Madam Chair. I'm voting no, and I would encourage my colleagues to vote no as well for the simple fact that this sends the entirely wrong message to businesses across the state of Minnesota who have managed to make it across a year worth of COVID shutdown only to have this message sent to them from on high here in the state of at the House of Representatives that we're going to get you again. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, you are muted.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And a question for the bill's author, Representative Olson. I noticed that there are grants here to get the word out to employees through these community organizations. And I'm wondering why there isn't some of that grant money should be, in my opinion, available to businesses, particularly small businesses who are going to be reading through this bill and if it should become law, the law, who probably are going to have to hire outside counsel just to interpret all the complicated language and requirements within this bill. So my question is why wouldn't you divide that money equally between small businesses and community organizations so that small businesses at least can not have to hire out what they need to do to understand how to implement this bill.
Representative Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Scott. Yes, it says employee outreach, but in other places, when, for example, in Minneapolis, when they did the similar grant program that we looked at when doing this legislation, it actually was split roughly 2-1 for worker and business outreach. So I think with the grants going to Dolly, that's definitely the spirit we want to support both the businesses and the employees in understanding this new benefit. And I think we have the ability with a grant program like this to do that.
Madam Chair.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I appreciate you saying that, but it's not written in the bill. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. So closing comment from Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. You know, right now, Madam Chair, there are really two different types of Minnesotas right now. There's the government of Minnesota, and then there's the private sector. And in the government of Minnesota, it's never had more money just sitting around. Never. When you have this, you have the surplus, we've got the money in budget reserves, you got the money that's coming in from the federal government. Government is flush. Lots of money to spend on whatever, I guess whatever the governor wants to spend it on. The legislature's out of the business of appropriating. But government has never had more money sitting around in the state of Minnesota's coffers. The private sector is a different situation. The private sector has been reeling from shutdowns, from government prohibitions on commerce and activity. And the private sector is hurting. And what we're seeing in this bill and in other bills is a failure to recognize the stress that is under our small businesses in Minnesota. Now, don't get me wrong. Amazon, Target, Walmart, they've never been doing better. They were able to stay open during these shutdowns when the small and regional businesses had to close. But those, and I'm using my air quotes here, those essential businesses like Target, Amazon, Walmart, they were able to stay open. They were able to collect revenue and get rich. That's why their share prices have skyrocketed in the last year of government shutdowns. So those issues, the issue of the public sector financing versus private sector financing, there's just a complete inability to recognize the differences in the financial situations of those two entities. I continually see my DFL friends coming forward with bills talking about how this has worked in Minneapolis or how it's worked in California. I just don't think it's a good idea for us to be referencing government of California or Minneapolis right now is what we want to do for the state of Minnesota and what we want to be doing for policies. So this is the fiscal connotations of this are limited to the state, but they are, as Representative Scott mentioned, they're particularly burdensome on small businesses across the state. Doesn't require a lot of talk on our side. Again, this is one of these things that will go onto the pile of things that have zero chance of becoming law this year. I'll be voting no, encouraging my colleagues to vote no. But again, anyone participating in this hearing should know that we don't have any concerns about this bill becoming law. It's not going to happen. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Olson, any last words?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, members. I would just remind folks that the people that have bared the brunt of the pandemic and what we're discussing are the frontline workers, the very 932,000 Minnesotans who need this benefit, and we have a moral responsibility to provide for them. And so that's exactly what this bill does, is make sure that the people who have been at the front lines, who are the ones that are feeling this more than probably any of us, are the ones we're trying to take care of in this bill, and this is way overdue. So with that, I'll just close by saying, no matter where you live, your job, or the color of your skin, through our differences, we want many of the same things. Snuggling with our kids to make them feel better when they're sick, seeing a doctor before our illness goes from bad to worse, or being able to recover from the flu without missing a bill or missing a job. This bill is about moving towards the kind of caring state we all want Minnesota to be, one that reflects the compassion Minnesotans have for our families and friends and neighbors. With that, Madam Chair, I renew my motion that House File 7 be recommended to be placed on the general register.
With that, Ms. Faulkman, please take the roll.
Chair Moran?
Aye.
Moran, aye. Vice Chair Olson?
Aye.
Olson, aye. Representative Garofalo?
No.
Garofalo, no. Representative Albright?
No.
Albright, no. Representative Becker Finn?
Aye.
Becker Finn, aye. Representative Bernardi? Representative
aye.
Bernardi, aye. Representative Eklund?
Aye.
Eklund, aye. Representative Hansen?
Aye.
Hansen, aye. Representative Hassan, excused. Representative Hertas?
Hertas, no.
Hertas, no. Representative Hornstein?
Aye.
Hornstein, aye. Representative Johnson?
No.
Johnson, no. Representative Kreisha?
Kreisha, no.
Kreisha, no. Representative Liebling?
Aye.
Liebling, aye. Representative Lilly?
Lilly, aye.
Lilly, aye. Representative Mariani?
Mariani, aye.
Mariani, aye. Representative Marquardt?
Marquardt, aye.
Marquardt, aye. Representative Miller?
Miller, no.
Miller, no. Representative Nash?
Nash, no.
Nash, no. Representative Nelson?
Nelson, aye.
Nelson, aye. Representative Noor?
Noor, aye.
Noor, aye. Representative O'Neill, excused. Representative Pawlowski?
Pawlowski, no.
Pawlowski, no. Representative Petersburg?
No.
Petersburg, no. Representative Pinto?
Aye.
Pinto, aye. Representative Schumacher?
Schumacher, no.
Schumacher, no. Representative Schultz?
Schultz, aye.
Schultz, aye. Representative Scott?
No.
Scott, no. Representative Sundin?
Aye.
Sundin, aye. 16 ayes, 11 nays.
Okay, well, there being 16 ayes and 11 nays, the motion prevails in House File 7. Is recommended for placement on the general register. Thank you, Representative. Thank you, Chair Olson. Vice Chair Olson. So, members, we are meeting again tomorrow evening at 5 o'clock to review the governor's revised budget recommendation and to adopt our budget resolution. I will be providing Representative Garofalo, Representative Miller. You will also get a copy of that resolution before it is made public. And it should be made public sometime tomorrow. And so with that, I just want to say thank everyone for your time today. And with that, we are adjourned.